And we are back with episode 794 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville, and the onslaught of shows has begun.
Oh, yes. We have two episodes worth of episodic discussion covering two different weeks, basically the last couple weeks of March. And we are going to be getting right into it, because as usual, we typically get into some of these shows with gusto. So before we do any of that, Gary, a disclaimer, please.
Yes, at this point, especially for these shows, we've given you several weeks to catch up on all your latest fun shows and learn all of their deep, dark secrets. And if you haven't, kick back and relax, because we'll tell you all of them, because we don't hold back in our discussions at all. So get ready for some good talk.
That's right. That's right. Okay. All right. We're going to start, as we usually do, with this particular week's bottom three. This week, we had 23 shows with 24 episodes. A couple of those shows we actually didn't watch. I'll start off there, actually. We didn't get scores in for Humans, the last two episodes of the second season. I did not get a score in for that. Kind of a little bit behind on that show, but so forth. But it has been renewed for a third season. So there you go. I will be eventually watching it. Homeland, I think we've pretty much put that one to bed for ourselves. That show just, it's worn out. It's welcome, so to speak, or it's just it's getting a little too repetitive. It maybe should have let itself go a little while ago, but we're done with that show right now. And then Elementary, this particular week, we didn't have an opportunity to get a score in for. So, but that season, as Gary may talk about later down the road, still doing pretty well.
Yes.
All right. However, we did get into all the other shows, and Edmund actually gave us some comments on some of these shows as well. So looking forward to his inclusion here in these two episodes. So this particular week that we're looking at, we had these shows at the bottom of the list. And I'm going to go ahead and start off with a show that got a 7.25, and that is Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 16, Starcrossed. A new villain comes to National City, putting Supergirl on high alert. At the same time, she faces an attack by the Music Meister. Kinda, because yet again, yeah, we have a flash, a crossover where it's only the last, like, 2 minutes that is related in any way to the crossover. Gary, you also seem to think that this was a pretty low-scoring episode, relatively speaking. What are your thoughts on Supergirl that week?
The mix-and-play character is always a hard character to pronounce and to write. He's this nearly omnipotent being who can pretty much create anything, reorganize reality. And as a result, he's played in a variety of ways. And the sort of puckish annoyance is hard for a lot of writers. And I think it was hard for these writers, too. He came across as more annoying than teasing. And as a result, you almost want to root for him sometimes with his joking, so to speak. Oh, let's put a funny one over on Supergirl, haha. But he didn't come across as likable, at least not for me, and then that's what sort of turns the whole episode for me, and it doesn't really work out that well. So I'm not saying I need every episode to be a knockdown, drag-out fight, but at the same time, this one just fell a little bit short. Like I said, I think the characterization of the villain was just off enough that he didn't engender any sympathy. So that was my problem. And I agree with you. Why do they always tack these last 2 minutes onto Supergirl for the crossovers? Well, I'd like to have a good 15 minutes in the Supergirl universe before we switch over to the Flash universe. Or, hey, tell you what, let's start off in the Flash and finish it next week in Supergirl. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, that would be nice. But I don't know why they do that either. And this was also the episode that had that really bizarre and almost just utterly predictable subplot with Wynn and his alien girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just like, wow, that happened exactly the way that you would think it would. Okay. And nothing's changing from my expectations here. So, okay. It's just more of the same and more of the same and more of the... Okay. So, yeah, that was a little bit disappointing. It just felt like a bland, average episode. The middle of the season for Supergirl has not been consistent, unfortunately.
I agree. And a side note, don't they, like, shoot right on the same sound stages now?
I think so.
Yeah, like, or at least near each other. So I wouldn't think it'd be as hard to shoot.
You would think.
Crossovers. You know, I understand when they were, hundreds of miles away from each other, where you'd have, you do a pickup shot in the one show and then shoot the whole rest, but that's not really a limitation anymore, but it feels like it.
It does. It feels like they are worlds away, but what can you do? All right, coming in our penultimate slot here for the week, with an average of 6.75, is Iron Fist, Season 1, Episode 1, Snow Gives Way, the premiere of the comic book adaptation about a billionaire New Yorker who returns home to battle crime after a lengthy stint in Asia studying Kung Fu.
What show is that one?
Because that's not the show I was watching.
That would be interesting. That would be an interesting show, yeah.
For those who missed it last episode, we got into a lot of the reasons why this show isn't working very well for us. Just the fact that that particular description doesn't seem to match what it is that we're watching is a big problem. Here's the thing. Let's just go into this a little bit. Well, we have
more.
Okay. A little bit more about a billionaire New Yorker who returns home to battle crime after a lengthy stint in Asia studying Kung Fu. See, the implication of that is that he left when he was old enough to have been the billionaire.
Yes. And stint implies something that it was a choice that he went and stayed for that lengthy amount of time. Yes.
And it was a personal choice to perhaps become a better person, to do something different with his life, things like that. He was, what, 8? I don't think he was a billionaire.
No.
He's not, in fact, a billionaire in the show. He's perhaps supposed to be, but he's not. There's just a whole lot of things that don't match the actual, because this would be a good description of what Iron Fist actually is. It's not what the show does. I do want to say one more thing. Okay, this is going to be me really pushing some buttons here, but too bad. Billionaire, kind of arrogant, entitled, white dude who goes through some stuff in a foreign land that makes him rethink what he's going to do with his life, and maybe he gains some skills that he didn't have before. That didn't tick people off as being insensitive when it was Tony Stark.
Or Batman.
I don't remember it making people angry when it was Batman Begins. I don't remember it making people angry when it was Oliver Queen on Arrow. And I don't really remember it making people angry when it was Stephen Strange in a movie last year. In fact, people were more upset that the Ancient One was played by a white woman. But yeah, that kind of also went away after people watched the movie. But it's just something that I find interesting. So this is kind of a fairly common origin story for a lot of these characters, but it's only this incarnation that gets that kind of criticism. Again, could it be because it's just a particularly poorly written example? I'm just saying. That's possible, right? It's because doesn't this read exactly like Iron Man? I'm just saying. Didn't people love that movie in his portrayal of it? Wasn't Tony Stark a character that people still to this day kind of emulate to a certain degree and think is pretty cool and like watching on the screen? Just comes to mind. Now, I'm sure there are going to be people who can point out the many differences but I'm just looking at this on the same kind of surface level and going, shouldn't we have hated the snarky, arrogant jerk that Doctor Strange was for a good part of his movie? It's just something that comes to mind. But that all said, Iron Fist, the first episode, was kind of bad. And, yeah. It's just at the bottom of the list. Yeah. But it was still better. Still better than our bottom show for the week. And that is The Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 14, The Other Side. The Saviors pay an unexpected visit to the hilltop, catching everyone by surprise. This time, they're planning on taking more than just supplies. They're taking the audience's patience.
Oh, jeez, please take me.
This one got an average of 6.17, if anybody would like to know just how bad this one ranked on our list.
Is that the lowest score ever?
For The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
I'm going to look while you tell me what you didn't like about this episode.
Oh, geez. Well, that teaser was horrible. They came for the doctor because the last one got thrown into the furnace. So, if I recall correctly. So, they need a new doctor. The Saviors do. So, they went and got one. So, oh, wow. Surprise, surprise. Also, this was just another sort of pause. We're getting ready to build up and go against the Saviors. Okay. Yeah, we're going to get supplies. You've been getting supplies for the Saviors anyway, so how is this technically different? You're just not handing it to them. So it was a lot of, as you said, just boring. I really didn't feel we got any development. We really didn't see much, virtually anything of Carol. We didn't we didn't see anything of really much of Alexandria that much. Yeah. So I just overall it just sort of left me bland. There was no real conflict this episode. There was no real I'm trying to think if there were any really big zombie fights this episode. I don't even think we had that. So
there wasn't hardly anything. Your answer to your question is this is the lowest scored episode of The Walking Dead since.
Time immemorial. Yes.
Since we started all this, Edmund pretty much puts it here. The show slows to a crawl again. Ever since the Glenn tease last season, I continue to question the writer's ability to sustain the plot. I might have more to say about that next episode. Yeah, I bet you do. That's the problem. There is so little that has happened. They had momentum when they came back from the mid-season break, and now it has slowed to a crawl again. This episode is literally, like, it's 10 minutes of an actual episode stretched into an hour. It's not even 10 minutes. It's just dragging, and it's focusing on characters that you really don't care about. To be honest, the stuff at the Hilltop. I mean, Gregory. I'm glad that Xander Berkeley is doing such a great job of playing this loathsome character, but he's a loathsome character. I want to see him get his comeuppance. I don't want to keep seeing him get enormous gobs of screen time. I don't know. This was just one of those episodes where somebody thought it was a great idea to stretch out what's going to happen, and they could have just. They need to stop decompressing the story. I know why they're doing it to a certain degree, but they just need to stop. This was just not a particularly good episode of The Walking Dead. This season has been a bit challenged, which is surprising because that initial shot in the arm that Negan gave them, they failed to sustain. And that's surprising to me because it's like, wow, not many shows get the chance to bring in a villain so polarizing that it alters the course of the show thereafter, and then you squander it like this. It's amazing to me. Any other comments here on The Walking Dead? I mean, I can't even come up with anything to say. There wasn't that much to talk about. It was just there.
No.
All right. Let's move on to much better shows here. And, we're going to talk about our top three. The number three show for the week was The 100, Season 4, Episode 6, We Will Rise. Clark and Roan travel through hostile territory in order to deliver an invaluable asset to Abby and her team. And this one came in at an average of 8.5. And what's really interesting here is that it is a very dark episode. Everything seems like it's completely hopeless. No, none of the various schemes to try and survive the upcoming apocalypse are coming anywhere close to working out. And it just means that every time something else is crossed off the list, the despair that the characters have to live through is really starting to gnaw at them. And it makes things so interesting because characters act out. And that's really kind of fun. This right now is actually living in kind of the space that The Walking Dead should be in. And this is trouncing it right now, which is not too surprising as The 100 has always been a fairly strong show. So very happy with that particular episode. Coming in at number two is Legion, Season 1, Episode 6, Chapter 6. David goes back to where it all started. Yeah, that's essentially true. Edmund says here, the puzzle pieces start to come together, but which David will emerge from all this? The who-blaring wild boy or the sensitive soul? Can't wait to find out. Yes, if you didn't watch the episode, you have no idea what that means. If you watched the episode, it's still possible you have no idea what that means.
As I said, I was running a fever this week, so I chose not to watch it. I need my full wits about me to watch this show, so...
It really does demand your full attention. I even have to watch it more than once occasionally. But yes, this is knocking it out of the park. It's got an average of 8.75. And the pieces are starting to come together. It's very clear at this point where the story is going. And what exactly has to happen in the last couple episodes. And yeah, I'm glad that the show is coming together. The first season is actually coming together very nicely at this point in this episode. So kudos to the writers for this one. Really gotta say, this show is nothing like what I thought it would be, and I'm so glad. Because it's like nothing else right now. That means that we can talk about the number one show for the week. And boy, this is a surprise considering some of the other comments that we've had so far in the last few months. The Flash, Season 3, Episode 17, Duet. Barry and his team are surprised when Mon-El and Hank Henshaw arrive on their Earth carrying a comatose Supergirl who was whammied by the Musicmeister. And this came in at an average of 9.17 and a song.
John, I'd like to make a confession.
Yes?
I bought the album.
You bought the album?
Yes, I did.
Gary?
Yes.
Gary, will you be my super friend?
I'll be your super friend.
Yeah.
Let's be super friends. Anyway, yeah, but yeah, so I enjoyed the Torch song at as well as the even though it was a little flat at moments, but I mean it was okay. It was all right, and I enjoyed Jesse singing as well as John Barrowman. That was a very interesting song, and actually the Super Friend one was probably the least liked song I felt out of the whole thing. But
it was goofy.
Yes. Extremely hokey, not horrible, but just I can't say it was not my favorite of the mix. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, and we've been playing it back and forth as I'm taking the children to school, and they're really liking it. So,
yeah, this episode was definitely the highlight so far of the season for me for this particular property and part of the DCW. Henry gave this a 9, saying this episode is simple in its goals and executes most of them well enough, which is more than I can say for most of the episodes leading up to it. Hopefully the show can learn from it and steady the show enough to deliver a rousing concluding arc. Well, we'll get into that next week. But for right now, yeah, this was not unlike the musical episode for Buffy's sixth season, where it was truly the highlight of that whole season. This was the highlight of the season for The Flash for me, and it might even have been the highlight of the season for Supergirl, even though it wasn't her show. I just have to say that Kara, at the beginning of the episode, that dress that they had her wear. Barry, how did you keep your composure? That's all I can say. I know that you're into Iris and everything, but how many times you got to see her get killed off before you think, hey, my super friend is looking awfully good?
Geez, Savitar wouldn't be able to poke a hole in her.
No, exactly, right? Yeah. Yes, yep. Think about that, Barry. Yeah.
Change history, yeah. Change the future. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Kudos to the wardrobe department for that choice. Not revealing in the slightest, but yeah.
Certainly told a story, yes.
It did. Yeah, just the tongue-in-cheek I'm Your Super Friend song still sticks in my mind as a highlight for me as far as just the fact that they went there and they did let themselves get a little bit goofy. I thought that Barry's song to Iris at the end, while I am not the biggest fan of their relationship, I thought that was actually very well done. I don't know if you know this or not, Gary, but both Supergirl and The Flash were on Glee.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Flash was a warbler, and and then she, I guess, was what, a generic cast member. I know she wasn't. She's never main cast, but
no, she was never main cast.
No, but they said that was one of the nice things about this doing this episode. They had a reasonably tremendous amount of cast to draw from to sing. They, as you said, the two stars both had singing experience as well as many of the crew. So,
yes, exactly. And they found every single person that had been in the DCW that had lots of singing experience and found a way to get them on there. Kudos for them finding a way to get Victor Garber on there.
That was a surprise. I'd actually seen Jesse Martin in Rents back in the day, so I knew he could sing the snot out of anything he wanted to. So that was an interesting grouping of the three of them to have together. So
yes. So let's see. What else to say about this other than the fact that just good for them for coming up with a really strong, solid episode out of a musical episode. Usually, I kind of get a little wary of those, but this one worked out really well.
And sort of in the end, it ended up as the sort of ultimate premise was that Wally's back with Iris and Kara is back with Mon-El again. So it sort of reset both of their relationships in a way that, geez, it would probably taken us 3 to 4 episodes a piece to get us back there again. So definitely magic does have its benefits. So
yes, it certainly seems so.
Did you really want to see 3 episodes of Wally trying to figure out what the heck to do?
No.
yeah, I didn't really want that either, and I wasn't looking forward.
Barry, by the way, because
Barry
is actually kind of.
You're right, Barry. I'm sorry. yeah, but Barry, who actually lived with her growing up for the whole time, isn't.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anyway,
it is.
Well, let's close that can right now. Yeah, but anyway. So anyway, it was a nice little gimmick, and I'm sort of curious now when they do that. I have to wonder. Did they literally just do it to have this reset, which is what I feel this sort of musical episode was, the reset for both of their relationships? Did they just put them both on the outs just to do this?
You know, I think they did.
Yeah.
And what's sad about that to me is that I actually do feel like Mon-El is kind of... I just don't necessarily like that relationship either, so...
Well, don't worry. If they follow Mon-El's line at all, it really doesn't. You know, he pays for it. Don't worry.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Yes. If I can't, you know what? If I can't ship Barry and Felicity, then I think that those two should get together, Barry and Kara, and just be done with it. She could teach him a thing or two.
I'm still holding out for Miss Spivet. So. Well.
All right, that's it for our top three then, and certainly we have gotten into some detail there, but there's a lot of other shows on this list, and Gary, I'm curious which one you'd like to talk about first. And boy, you went exactly where I thought that you would go.
Darn telepaths. Anyway, I actually wanted to talk about The Expanse. I've been loving this series, especially since I've caught up on it recently.
Yes, this one right here is Season 2, Episode 8, Pyre. Naomi tracks down signs of protomolecule, and Fred Johnson's control over OPA collapses. And this one came in at an average of 8.33, just missing the top three. Edmund gave some comments here, and he says, the tension building between Fred and the Belters comes to a head. Tense standoff that brings even more conflicts and clashes of outlook into play. It's working for me, having read the books. How's it playing for those who haven't? Still following along okay? Yeah, I think so.
Oh, geez, they're doing a great job. You know, I'm not sure how true they are to the books, but the way that they're layering details and things, I really get the sense that they're following the outline pretty darn well. Edmund, I guess, could attest to that a little bit more. But if he says he's following it and he knows the books, then I think they're pretty much on track, which is the sense I get. I'm not feeling plot lines going somewhere to a dead end. I'm not feeling like they're trying to figure development out. Everything sort of is slipping into these nice little pockets as they go. And it's very enjoyable. The tech is thrown at us without being completely unbelievable, protomolecules aside. And I'm enjoying the continuing differences between the different cultures, if you will, the Belters versus the Earthers versus the Mars people. So they continue to be unique and stand apart. And I'm enjoying this a great deal. It's, as I think I commented to my friends, it's like, wait a minute, we have hard science fiction on television again? Amazing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this is. I knew that many people were saying that this was a series that had the potential to be like Game of Thrones in space in terms of the complexity of the politics and so forth, and I think we're getting that, especially here in this season. We're starting to see why that feels that way. I think they're doing a really good job of keeping everything understandable, and... one of the things that I do, and I would recommend this to just about anybody who is really into this show and wants to get more insight, there is a podcast called The Churn, and it is an official podcast by Sci-Fi, and it actually has as frequent guests not only the writers of the books, but the executive producers for the show, and they all talk together. So you get a lot of insight about how was this handled in the books? Oh, it was handled in this way. Oh, and this is why we changed it like this, because it gives you more insight into this character or this character's point of view. Here's what this character's arc is doing right now and blah, blah, blah. And it's not necessary, I would say, but it adds so much flavor to what you're seeing because it deepens your appreciation for how the adaptation is going. I think you could watch it completely straight and know every little bit of what you need to know in terms of the characters and their interactions. And I love that fact. I think that this is one of the smartest shows that's on TV right now. And the fact that, as you said, Gary, and we've said this a couple times, hard sci-fi on TV. And it's working really well right now.
Yeah, I'll admit some of the acting can be a little flat, but given the quality of the storyline, the great special effects, and the sort of overall arc, it's and world building, that I can overlook some of the slightly cheesy acting because it's being overshadowed by so many more good things.
Oh yeah, definitely. Although certainly, I think that the more that I get into the show, the more that I am forgiving those things as well. And there are even some characters that I used to feel like they are quote unquote lead characters, and I felt like they were almost getting that they were coming across as really wooden or like less interesting than they should be as the central characters of the show. And now that I've seen where they're going with it and what they represent, I feel like it actually makes more sense the way that they did it, and that I understand and appreciate the way they did it. So yeah, I'm continuing to like this. I definitely see that it slowed down slightly from the some of the events of the beginning of the season, but that makes sense since that was the culmination of the first book, and now we're in the plot building portion of the second book here in this portion of the season. But I don't feel like the tension has necessarily dropped all that much. I think we are still getting a lot of material to work with. So, any other comments on The Expanse?
No, just keep watching it, please. I hope it gets renewed for season 3.
It has been renewed for season 3.
Wow, thanks, John. That is really. Could I get $1 million too?
Nope, can't do that.
Okay.
One.
Oh, geez.
One at a time. Sorry.
Darn it. That's okay. I'll be happy with the renewal. That's good. Okay.
Yep. So that's still amazes me that we managed to get the show renewed, and yeah, that's definitely something I'm looking forward to more of this show. All right, as I go down this list, what I would say is one to talk about next. I'm just going to throw a couple of them out there, actually, because Edmund had these comments. So let me go ahead and throw them out. Black Sails, Season 4, Episode 8, 36. A rescue plan may come between Flint and Silver. Max discovers the real price of freedom. Arakam tracks his prey. The walrus sails into uncharted territory. And this one came in at an average of 8.25. And that was pretty highly ranked show right there. Edmund says here, obviously the attempt to bring Maddie between Silver and Flint is working and setting the stage for Treasure Island, but the highlight for me is the Jack and Max show in the New World. The ladies return to the fore as the real movers and shakers behind the scenes, and Harriet Walter made for a great foil and temptation. Yeah, this was a really good female-fronted episode for sure. Even as Edmund says here, there's a couple episodes left of the show, and we're seeing everything line up and setting the stage for Treasure Island, which of course this is the prequel to, as I mentioned last time. Also, we have The American, Season 5, Episode 3, The Midges. Philip and Elizabeth tell Paige more about the family business, but pressing new questions arise when an operation takes a ghastly and unexpected turn. This also got an 8.25, and Edmund says of this episode, another tense away mission, cowboy dress-up this week with another unfortunate outcome. Not as affecting as Lois Smith's demise last season, the guest shot that would have won an Emmy, sorry Margot, but still a reminder of the ruthless nature of their work. How long can they protect Paige from that side? The edges are fraying already. Yeah, and I really do feel like that is where they're going with this. This whole season seems to be about them trying to figure out what to do with Paige and the fact that she knows so much about what they do. Yeah, it's nothing like being a family of Russian spies to make normal concerns about your daughter's boyfriend kick up a notch. Yeah. So that's what I took away from this episode, too, was that it's like, here's an a situation where it's just parents talking about, you know, okay, you have your first boyfriend, we have concerns, type of thing, and no, things are much more complicated when we're also Russian spies, when that gets added to the equation. So there is that. Also, Edmund has some comments on Into the Badlands, Season 2, Episode 1, Tiger Pushes Mountain. In the Season 2 premiere, Sunny finds a new foe, as well as a new unexpected ally. Meanwhile, MK learns about his gift in a mysterious place. And Edmund says about this, the series knows exactly what it is. Crazy over-the-top mayhem and keeps the focus right there. Thunderdome, prisoner appetizer, widow whirlwind main course with a side of sidekick payback. Not that interested in the power struggles, but they only exist to get us to the next fight. And this is absolutely true. I love this episode too. Also gave it an 8 because the widow's bloody elimination of enemies was perhaps even more affecting at the end of the day. Because of the fact that, it just went on and on, so, and it made the episode more awesome. So, yeah, crazy fun show, Into the Badlands, for those who are looking for a lot of fun there. All right, Gary, anything else on the list that you would like to talk about?
Let's see. Yes, it's continuing to be at least reasonably good. Star Wars Rebels, it's always been one of my favorites.
Okay, and let's see, that would be Star Wars Rebels, Season 3, Episode 20, Twin Suns. Reacting to a vision of Maul, Ezra defies Hera and Kanan to travel to a remote planet in hopes of stopping the former Sith Lord from carrying out his plans. And this one came out in at an average of 7.75.
Now, this for me was an example of what I will say that they were doing a slightly bit of a kid's show, but they did it intelligently. It wasn't slapstick the way that they have been doing. So we have Ezra with this preoccupation about Darth Maul, or just Maul now. And, you know, he gets this, you know, the sense to come, and he meets up with them, and it doesn't quite go the way that we're planning. The remote planet, which, gosh, that gets a lot of traffic going through that planet for being so remote. The planet we're talking about, of course, is Tatooine, and we get to see yet another person from A New Hope enter the picture. We've seen a bunch over the time, and we're currently also enjoying Thrawn in this season, but we get to actually see Obi-Wan Kenobi. Maul is after him for vengeance, and he uses Ezra as bait for all intents and purposes, and Ezra has a few words with Kenobi, and if it really fits in well, I think, with A New Hope, in a sense that it gives I guess notice to Obi-Wan that, you know, things are happening in the universe and he's probably going to have to come out of this shell and or this hiding place that is Tatooine for him, and he's going to have to, you know, enter back into the sort of world again to help the rebels defeat the Empire, finally go back and finish his job, if you want to think of it that way. And I thought it dovetailed really nicely. The only thing that sort of caught me quite off guard was the quickness with which Obi-Wan dispatched Maul. I would have expected somewhat of a fight scene, and I got probably 8 seconds. It was extremely short. Yes.
Yeah, that's why the score came in a little bit low for me. At least one of the reasons is that, yeah, you build this thing up over, you know, a season and more, that there's going to be this confrontation. You foreshadow this confrontation, and it lasts a blink of an eye.
Well, you know, there's two things to think about. One is that maybe Maul really wanted to die. Think of all he's been through at this point, between, you know, literally getting bisected to android legs, to the Sisters of the Night working magics upon him. He's gone through a lot, and maybe he just really wants to die at this point. It's been, you know, he has not lived a good life by any means over these last 15 to 20 years. So maybe he wants to be killed. And then the secondly, of course, is that, you know, Obi-Wan has the high ground.
Yeah, I get it. God, I was just thinking of that.
So, there's that too.
It kind of is. But even so, I mean, when you build it up that way, I guess you can kind of retroactively throw in there, you know, that, yeah, maybe Maul did want to actually die. He was at the end of his rope. He just wanted it to be at the hands of his, you know, nemesis or whatever you wanted. But that's not in the text necessarily, right? It's just they spent a lot of time with Ezra hunting, you know, kind of wandering in the desert, and take one of those minutes, put it towards a little bit more weight to the whole fight. Even if it were to set up the fact that Maul intentionally left himself open, or whatever you want to call it, it just felt like that fell flat. You know, you are building this up over time. It was the whole thing with Maul learning about Obi-Wan and the planet with Twin Suns. All of that was such a big deal earlier this season that for this to be the culmination of it just felt not enough. it felt like it was cut off too early. It just didn't work for me.
It is interesting because it really, for me, this episode also helped define where Rebels is fitting against New Hope. You get the sense of how close it actually is now to that time frame, and it makes me think that the rebellion really wasn't that old when we first started to see it. We're just starting to see the influx of it now, but I don't think we're. What would you think we are, about 2 to 3 years away from A New Hope?
Yeah, maybe two.
So, you know, the Rebellion was not that old a device. So it's it is interesting how we, you know, how this show, on top of, you know, being what it is giving us sort of so much extra background data to get us to the beginning of Star Wars. It's really filling in a lot of nice little niches for us to, you know, have a sense of what's going on. You know, as much as Rogue One might have done, Rebels is probably on a consistent basis giving us much more, you know, backstory and detail than that movie ever was able to deliver. So,
and it's possible we'll be talking about that again very shortly. As in next episode. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. I'm just going to go down the list of the shows that we haven't really had that many comments for. We have Arrow, Season 5, Episode 16, Checkmate. That came in at an average of 8.25. We have The Magicians, Season 2, Episode 8, Word as Bond, which had a score of 8. Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 12, The End of the Beginning, scored an 8. The Originals, Season 4, Episode 1, Gather Up the Killers, came in at an 8. Sleepy Hollow, Season 4, Episode 11, The Way of the Gun, also scored an 8. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 2, Episode 15, The Fellowship of the Spear, also got an 8. Lots of shows that were in that above average category this week, so good for them. Colony, Season 2, Episode 10. The Garden of Beasts came in at a 7.5. Grimm, Season 6, Episode 11, Where the Wild Things Are, came in at an average of 7.5. And finally, 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 8, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., scored an 8.5. So that is it for this particular week of episodic discussion. We'll be back next episode with another bit of episodic discussion that will get us all caught up. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, watch, read, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.